corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It is Thursday, March 6th. It is the final day before the trade deadline, and we are underway on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media along with you on this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Wes, you ready to rock? It's the day before the deadline.
Let's go.
D-Day minus one. And we wanted to get you involved on the text line for the first half of this hour. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com going to join us a little bit later on. Talk some NHL goaltending ahead of the deadline. But right now, text line 960-960. And here's what we want you to answer. What do you think the Flames should do before the trade deadline? Simple as that for this part of the hour. What do you think the Flames should do between now and Friday at 1 p.m. Calgary time? Let's just dive in.
Ready to rock? Yeah, let's hear your ideas.
960-960 is the text line. Start with this. Use their retention spots and take on a lot of money of unrestricted free agents for picks. Move those picks in the summer for players to come in and make an immediate impact. Also, I'm not really against moving Martin Pospisil to a team. I think somebody could overpay for him. You know, the retention slots are really interesting. You get those picks for... You get picks for retaining or prospects for retaining. New Jersey got Shane LaChance from Edmonton to help facilitate the Trent Frederick deal to take on an extra 50% of his contract. So could the Flames be that third-party broker? I don't believe they ever have been a third-party broker before. I know Conway's talked about it. I mean, they used them a couple of times last year to help other teams bring in salary. But I can't recall the Flames ever being that third-party team. They could also potentially, between now and the deadline, bring in a higher-priced veteran who has a couple of years left on his deal that could help another team open up space as well. Like, I'm not, because Ryan Reeves is on waivers, but say that Brad Treliving's like, hey, we need some help. Could you take Reeves? We'll give you a sweetener and. Again, I'm not suggesting that's the deal, but Reeves is the example because he's on waivers on this Thursday. Something like that, a player like that who has a little bit of time left on a contract, who maybe is quote-unquote a little overpaid, you could use your copious amounts of cap space in that way as well.
Yeah, and I want to ask you this, because the Flames have two retention slots remaining. Each team gets three. They have one in use on the Jacob Markstrom deal. Is there... Like, would you be saving one? Would you be willing to use two tomorrow, or do you want to keep one open for future?
I mean, I guess it depends if they're expiring deals or not.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd use them both if they're expiring. I probably wouldn't. I'd probably want to keep at least one open for next season. But if you do two and they're both on expiring deals, then...
Get those back.
You get those back.
Yeah, that's fair.
What else we got?
Hang
here?
On, yeah. Let's hit the Pospisil thing really quick.
Oh yeah, because you've brought this up before too, and I'm not fully against the idea of if you can get a nice return, if somebody's willing to quote unquote overpay for him, I'd be open to it on their end.
Yeah, I can see it making some sense on both sides. Like I see how potentially acquiring team, how a contender would look and say, geez, you know, we like the speed. We like the physicality that he can play with. We like the sort of snarl that he could bring to our lineup. That's the sort of guy in a 7-game playoff series that other teams are just going to absolutely despise by the end of it. And he certainly has those rat qualities. I understand the appeal. And yet, if you're the Flames, Martin Pospisil has really plateaued this season. He certainly hasn't been as consistently ratty as he was last year. I think that's probably necessary to prolong his NHL career, but you know, he's plateaued. He's become a better fit for the fourth line, albeit somebody who's still played mostly in the top nine. I think if you get a good offer there, and you could certainly ask for a good offer because it's a very reasonable contract, I think you consider it.
Yeah, it's one that I, at the very least, would be
like
interested in seeing if they explored.
Martin Pospisil has become the sort of player that I think Dryden Hunt could replace in the lineup.
Fair enough. Yep.
Now, I really like Martin Pospisil's game at his best. Certainly, Dryden Hunt can't bring the same sort of speed. That's one that you would be maybe not selling at the highest, but you'd still be selling high, and I could wrap my head around that one.
This from Kevin. I think they should stand Steinberg, which is stand Pat, which is something that I think that we're very, very, very much ready for them to do. I think that there is a decent enough expectation that they just do very, very little, if anything at all. Like they could do nothing and not pull off a single transaction between now and Friday's deadline. And I don't think either you or I would be surprised, honestly.
Yeah. Like if we were looking at the betting odds, that would be the favorite.
Yeah. Right?
Stand Pat or certainly have a very quiet day. You know, the over under on Flames trades tomorrow might be half. And if not, it's 1.5.
This from Tim in Tuscany. They should broker deals with their large cap space and get picks and prospects. Fair enough. Sean in Belmont. I want to see Tiege Aginla in a Flames uniform. Rasmus Anderson for Tiege and a first. Think Utah's trading Tiege Aginla less than a year
and
before
a first?
Drafting? No. Well, the Flames would give up Rasmus in a first.
Oh, okay.
I think. Oh, no. Flames are getting Tiege in a first for Rasmus.
Yeah. They don't make it that strong in Utah.
Okay.
Actually, Google it. It's not that
no,
strong.
No, they don't. I get the inference you're making there, Wes. Mackenzie Lake says, not saying it would be enough, but if Carolina gets down to the wire and are desperate, I would send a first in this year's mediocre draft and a mid-level prospect for an unsigned Rantanen, get him here, sell the city and organization, and push for the playoffs.
First and what?
And a mid-level prospect.
I don't think they make it that strong in Carolina either.
Okay, Wes is not on board with that either.
A first and a mid-level prospect?
For a guy.
Like, we're talking a first and William Stromgren for Rantanen?
Yeah.
That they just gave up
an unsigned
Marty Nakash and Jack Drury for?
He said, no, he did qualify it with if they get desperate.
Yep. Okay.
I still am not doing that. The only way, if I'm Calgary, that I acquire Rantanen is if I know he's signing a deal. Like if the
right.
deal is essentially agreed upon before the fax. They still use fax? Before the fax is into the NHL office.
Right. In which case, you're paying a lot more in return.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carrie says, guys, what are your thoughts on Bowen Byram? I was high on him coming into the league, but feel his concussions have stalled his development. If you could get him for a pick or two, would you do it? Yes, I would.
Yeah.
If Bowen Byram was available and the Sabres were able or willing to move on from him, I think he was both Wes and my quote-unquote big swing when we went through that exercise on Wednesday's show.
Yeah, and hasn't missed a game this season, to my knowledge. If he has, maybe it's one. So I don't think... Listen, we know that concussions can add up over time, and it's easier perhaps to get the next one after you've had the last one type deal. I'm not sure that Bowen Byram has one of those damaged goods stickers on him right now. No more than a lot of guys in the NHL.
Lonnie says the same thing. I'd like to see Bowen Byram here. A top pair defenseman is a good addition, I think. That's from Lonnie in Dover.
I like that Lonnie called him a top pair defenseman because I think Bowen Byram on the Flames immediately makes Byram and Uyghur your top pair. And then I quite like the way Rasmus Anderson and Kevin Ball slot as a second pair. Now, I think the price to get a 23-year-old defenseman who skates like the wind, can produce offense, already owns a Stanley Cup ring, I think the price is going to be at the premium level, but that's a guy I'd be willing to pay it for.
This says, can you explain to me why the Flames have $81 million in cap space and why they're not spending this money to get some better players? Well, you can't spend the money at the trade deadline. You have to trade. You can't just go sign players at the deadline. That would be one. And they have that because, well, they have a very low payroll this year and money gets prorated at the trade deadline. So that's why it's so much money. It's kind of like the equivalent of $82 million at the beginning of the year.
Right. And so you're talking about $82 million of total salary cap money that they could take on. The Flames wouldn't actually be paying the $82 million if that clears it up in any way, shape, or form.
Ken says, boys, I'm hoping beyond hope that Conroy makes a big move and nabs one or both of those young studs in Buffalo. This says, trade Anderson, Kadri, and Coleman. It's a seller's market. Craig has to. Every fan wants it. Well, I can tell you not every fan because I'm reading the text line. These are all fans too. These aren't fabric. Like Wes and I aren't coming up with a bunch of different numbers and texting in. But yes, it is very much looking like a seller's market, especially after what we saw on Wednesday with some of those big deals.
Yes. Now a seller's market for, you know, a guy like Kadri with 5 years left on his deal. I don't know that that's the case, but yeah, it is a seller's market, but the Calgary Flames have also, and you can't undo this part, the Calgary Flames have also put themselves in a playoff chase. Mm-hmm. And part of sort of Craig Conroy's vision is what it would mean to get Connor Zary and Matt Coronato and Dustin Wolf playoff experience this year. And I just think, hey, you can hope that, but if you are thinking you might wake up tomorrow to news that the Flames have sent three established core pieces out the door, I think you're going to go to bed disappointed.
This says, go get Cousins, trade the Devils first, Hunter Brustevich and Yegor Sharangovich. I think it'll take more than that to get Dylan Cousins. I think the Sabres are holding on to him fairly tightly. I'm not saying they wouldn't trade him, but I think you're going to have to give up a larger impact name than Sharangovich on your roster and probably a larger impact name as a prospect.
I think I was going to say expect, and that's not the right way to put it, but how often do we see some significant trades get made in the summer, especially around the draft, and you hear whether it's the GM saying it publicly or you just kind of hear in conversations with people, yeah, this, they've been talking about this for months, right? The conversations about Cousins started 6 months ago and he finally got traded. Like, I don't expect Cousins or possibly even Bowen Byram, who, you know, the ticking clock on Byram is RFA, not UFA. And so you're not pressured into a trade in the same way. I don't really expect either of them to move tomorrow.
Those
could happen.
Again, feel like offseason moves.
But you could hear, let's say the Calgary Flames can land one of those players in the summer. I'd expect to hear that they've been talking about it since
the deadline or before. Ben and Douglasdale. Be a player by using cap space to gain picks or prospects. Try to move Miramanov for whatever they can or put him on waivers and let the roster ride. That's from Ben and Douglasdale. We'll see if anything happens with Daniil Miramanov. I believe they've been, you know, for a number of weeks, if not longer, been seeing if there is a place that they can find Miramanov to play. So we'll see if that's something they do. And wouldn't be a shock if at some point between now and the end of the season they would go down the waiver road. But as of right now, Miramanov remains with the Flames.
I was a little bit surprised we didn't see him on waivers today, because this is the day you have the, hey, does anybody want this guy before the deadline claims. Like, this is your last opportunity for, hey, like, anyone interested here? And so I wondered. Now, The Flames acquired Miramanov in a significant trade. They invested in him immediately with a two-year extension. It has not panned out the way they hoped. Perhaps there's some hesitation to wind up with a little egg on your face in that scenario, but I was surprised that Miramanov wasn't on waivers today or earlier. It's not a fit, and he's not a seventh defenseman.
G says, trade. Kadri, Backlund, Uyghur, Coleman, anyone over 30. So tired of let's just make the playoffs. Hasn't worked in 36 years. I think we've addressed that. Francesca says, trade for a couple of depth pieces for the Wranglers, a la the Emilio Pettersson, Riley Damiani trade a couple of years ago. Doesn't help anyone's development for that team to spiral the way they have since Christmas. So, I do think that Brad Pascal and Craig Conroy on the Wranglers will be looking at some depth moves as well to maybe shore things up with a Wranglers team that has been skidding for sure here.
Yeah. Were you surprised this is a little off topic. Were you surprised they didn't put a claim in on Walker Duehr a couple days ago?
Not overly.
Yeah. Okay.
Not overly. Because they
certainly miss him more at the AHL level than they ever would at the NHL level, but I wonder, because if it's your own player who's been claimed or your former player, you don't have to do the waiver process again. I wondered about that one.
Danny says, take the big swing you guys talked about and bring in Bowen Byram. I've wanted the Flames to bring him in originally from the Avs. Will cost a lot, but he's exactly what they need. Cameron says, acquire a couple late round draft picks with low depth chart guys and roll with the core they have the rest of the season. Mike says, would like to see an attempt at JJ Paterka. Brant Clark would be nice, but I think the ask is too high for both. You'd have to be giving up. I think the only way you get Clark is if a impact veteran is going to Los Angeles. I don't think they're giving up Clark unless they're getting an impact veteran. On the JJ Paterka front, a little bit different. I do know that that's a name that Frank Saravalli brought up on Tuesday's show. You know, if Paterka became available, he believes the Flames would be making phone calls. But again, what is Buffalo going to do here? They've got a lot of young players, and they know that they lose every trade, it feels like, because they're always dealing from the back foot.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't want to do that this time around.
It would be nice to get out of that habit if you're the Buffalo Sabres, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of exactly what they're thinking right now.
And Paterka's a guy that I would be even more surprised to see him move than it would be to see Byram. Now, I don't profess to be an expert on the Sabres, but I think Cousins and Byram move before Paterka.
Yeah. What else we got here as we wrap things up on our what do you think the Flames should do at the deadline? This says, goaltending and on most nights defense has been the strength. Goal scoring, not so much. Trade for another top shutdown defenseman and hope to win by stingy D, and hopefully the goals come. I don't know what type of shutdown D is available that would fit the Flames. But a guy like Byram, a guy like Matthias Samuelsson in Buffalo is another example of a player they could go get. Mario Ferraro is a name I threw out there. Those are some of the names that you could point to that could help in that regard.
Yeah, one of the, I suppose, stronger messages that Craig Conroy could send in terms of his faith in this group, and I'm not vouching for him to do this. I think I don't like the idea of a short-term investment in this team. One of the ways he could really show a lot of faith in them would be to go get a top four defenseman. It's just, if you check the prices on those at previous deadlines, it can get pretty silly.
This from Michael. What about Oleksiak in Seattle, who has 2 years left? I would not be giving up significant assets for Oleksiak. However, if Taylor and I just had a little foot touch moment under the table and Taylor got extremely uncomfortable, apologies over there. I wouldn't be giving up significant assets for Oleksiak, but if you could get him for cheap or if Seattle was really adamant about moving him out, then I'd be a little bit more interested in that.
Does it tell you something about the market for defensemen that Carson Soucy just got traded for a third?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why if you could get a third or a second for Joel Hanley, You have to do
have the conversation.
You have to. But otherwise, if you're only getting fifth and sixth, I don't know if that's the way to go.
If you get offered a third, though, you've got to.
Yeah. This says trade for Zegras. I've said many, many times, I love Trevor Zegras as a player. I really do. I know he's having a down year, and he's had a down couple of years, and maybe you could get him, quote-unquote, on the cheap. However, my worry with him is that he doesn't re-sign here. I do think Zegras is a guy who, I think it's pretty well documented, honestly, that he's a guy who would like to be in a bigger market with, you know, a little bit more of a spotlight city, and that's fine. I think Zegras is a hell of a player. I think he's trying to refine his game, and I think he'd be actually, from a hockey standpoint, a nice fit here. But a guy, an American guy who maybe doesn't want to stay in a small Canadian market, I'm a little less on board with, because I don't know if that ends up really fitting what the Flames are trying to do here.
Yeah, he's not the profile of player I'd be chasing.
Great stuff on the text line, 960, 960. That's what you would do at the trade deadline, which is Friday at 1 o'clock, and all day Friday on Sportsnet 960, The Fan Live, and on our family of podcasts. We'll be bringing you trade deadline coverage brought to you by four outstanding sponsors, including Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Thursday, so it's time to check in with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley. Always great to chat with Kevin. It's also the day before the trade deadline, and so lots of interesting things to get into with Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. Mr. Woodley, happy Deadlines Eve to you. How are we doing?
We're doing good. It sounds like the team I cover for the NHL.com has made a move already in the last couple of minutes. So a subtraction move, which without further additions becomes very interesting in this race for eighth.
Carson Soucy to the Rangers for a third-round pick is the deal that got made by the Canucks. We'll see what Vancouver does between now and the deadline, including perhaps some intrigue around the future of Brock Besser, which we can get into a little bit later on. But, you know, Kev, since we've started having you on for the last year and a bit here, you know, one thing that we've talked about before, one thing you've been very adamant about throughout your time with us and just whenever you've been doing these hits elsewhere is, you know, the concept of trading for a goalie at the trade deadline and why it can be a risky or dangerous thing to do. And I guess it begs the question, on the day before the deadline, why don't we see more deals involving goalies at this time of year?
In a nutshell, there's not enough time between now and the end of the season for a lot of goalies to get truly comfortable behind a new team. And that may sound silly to say, because we do see goalies get traded and have sort of immediate positive impact. Mackenzie Blackwood had an immediate positive impact on the Colorado Avalanche. But interestingly enough, as he told me at the time, or 2 or 3 weeks into it, he wasn't sure he could have that same positive impact if that had been a deadline deal. In other words, the nature of being traded in early December versus early March, it allows you to take a breath and adjust to a new team without the pressure of needing immediate success. And I think it would be silly to ignore that pressure in an already pressure-packed position. Guys feel it. And I've talked to a lot of them over the years about, you know, the impact. Like, you try too hard. You try to do too much. At a time when you need to sort of be sitting back, and you hear me talk a lot about letting the game come to you, but letting the reads come to you, learning the tendencies of your new teammates within a new system, you can feel quite naturally pressed to try and do well, do more. And if there's another theme, you know, that we've hit on, you know, over this past year consistently, it's that, like, you can't just try harder as a goalie. It doesn't work. It usually takes you out of your game. And so I think the fact that most teams only have 20 games left, that even a workhorse goaltender is going to play max 15, it's just, You can make that adjustment in that period of time, but it's a big ask and not everybody's comfortable with it. And so I've kind of developed a checklist over the years of some of the factors that, you know, might play a role in determining that timeline of comfort in terms of style of goaltending. And, you know, a lot of it comes from the Ryan Miller trade that I think actually kind of ended the blockbuster goalie deals back in 2014. He's a Vezina Trophy winner, MVP of the 2010 Olympics. 4 years later, he's got a .923 save percentage with Buffalo. He goes to St. Louis to be the finishing piece. And instead, they're out in the first round in six games. His save percentage is .897 after being .923 in Buffalo. And we haven't really seen, Lehner go to Vegas, but they already had Fleury. We saw Vegas go to Minnesota, but they already had Talbot. Like, the last time we saw a, you are our new starter, you are our number one, you are going to lead us to the promised land move, was the Ryan Miller trade. And a lot of the factors that go into getting comfortable, like, he checked the box in the opposite direction. First, has he been through it before? Has he been through a trade before? Does he know what's that like, what that's like? Even if it's in the summer, and he had more time to adjust. Has he been through it before? Miller hadn't. Second, is he a guy that plays a lot of flow and rhythm in his game, a lot of outside-in, retreat, backwards flow? Everybody has it to a degree, but it's varying degrees. Or is he a guy who kind of sits in the crease and lets the game come to him spot to spot, a little more inside-out and patient? Miller, backwards flow, aggressive goaltender. Those guys tend to rely on what things more? Rhythm and timing. That requires a comfort level with your teammates and an ability to read off them. Takes longer to adjust. And then style of team fitting the style of play. Buffalo was a team that gave up a lot off the rush. And so it actually matched his sort of backward skating and that flow style play. He goes to St. Louis where they force everyone to dump the puck in and they play everything in zone. Again, strengths and weaknesses didn't fit. And so he sort of became the poster child for no big blockbuster trades at the deadline for goalies. And I think a lot of the reasons why it didn't work there are things you can look for when you're trying to figure out whether it might work right now.
Well, and I mean, it's interesting. I'd be curious your thoughts, because the Spencer Knight trade, which sees him go to Chicago, that's not like a deadline acquisition for the Blackhawks. That's a long-term addition. The deadline acquisition was Florida getting Seth Jones. But I'm Florida also goes and gets Vitek Vanacek from San Jose. I'm curious kind of your read on Spencer Knight going to Chicago and that acquisition, and I guess Florida's plan to then go get Vanacek to backfill after moving Knight.
Well, okay, so part one, I could see Knight having a lot of success there in the immediate term. And it would, in a lot of eyes, you'd be like, what the hell is this guy talking about? If he goes and have success there in the last 20 games, you know, what do you mean there's not enough time to adjust? But there's certainly not the pressure on Spencer Knight in Chicago that there is on, you know, say, whoever, if somebody were to get traded to Edmonton by noon tomorrow, right? Like, it's just a totally different game. I like that trade for the Blackhawks long-term. Spencer Knight's actually outperformed Sergei Bobrovsky on a per-shot basis this year. His adjusted save percentage is significantly better. In terms of Vanacek, again, those are the kind of moves we've seen more often where it's more just in case of emergency break glass, we want to have another body. I was a little surprised, and I haven't been able to ask the question of anybody inside in Florida, because I thought that Chris Driedger was an NHL goaltender and I thought he'd move up seamlessly into that. So I was a little surprised they felt the need to upgrade there. But what you get in Vanacek, and I've said this before, a high floor in terms of a steadiness. Again, a guy who's a lot more technical, probably won't take long to adjust because he doesn't play with a lot of extra depth or a lot of extra flow. He checks that box. He checks the box of having moved before. He's been through different teams and different systems several times over the last couple of years in that adjustment process. So he checks both of those boxes. And I think from a style point, I'd have to go through, ultimately you want to run through a checklist. Like, what is he good at on ClearSight Analytics? All the different little subcategories, and what do the Panthers give up? And you hope that those match. But for sure, he checks the first two boxes. Does he have the same ceiling as Spencer Knight? Actually, this year, the reality is Spencer Knight's better than both of them, but Does he have the same ceiling? No. But does he have a steady floor? If you're a great defensive team and something happens to Bob, will this guy go in and not cost you games? That's kind of the profile of a Vitek Vanacek. Maybe not the highest ceiling, but a real steady floor. And so a nice get if you're looking for an insurance policy, somebody who, you know, for the Panthers, doesn't need to win them games, but probably won't cost you games.
Does this mean in a copycat league that if the Panthers repeat, everyone has to go trade for two goalies next year?
Yeah, you know what? They're really, it's interesting because this is second straight year that the backups outperform the starter in Florida, and yet we see what happens come playoffs. It's actually the third straight year. Alex Lyon did it a couple of years ago,
right?
Got the Panthers into the playoffs, and Bob gets them to the final. Last year, Anthony Stolarz, and look how good he's been in Toronto when healthy. He outperforms Bob in the regular season statistically, but it's obviously Bob's net in the playoffs, and he wins Stanley Cup. And this year, Spencer Knight did the same thing. So, you know, and if you're Florida, as much as you know you have something good in your backups, and in this case, they turn Knight into Seth Jones and a positive, obviously positive asset in their mind and something that helps them get closer to winning again, you don't worry about the fact that Bob is below expected or close to expected for the regular season again, because you know he's capable of turning it on come playoff time. So that's a really tough model to sort of buy into and trust, because the numbers don't paint a super rosy picture. It's not terrible, but it's not the nicest picture from a regular season standpoint. And yet, look at what that guy does every time we get into the playoffs. Like, he just, there's another level that he's able to find, and they obviously have faith that he'll be able to do it again this year.
Kevin, there's obviously a lot of interest here in Calgary, as I'm sure there is in Vancouver with Utah Hockey Club because of the wild card chase in the Western Conference. I'm curious, what do you make of their decision late last night to extend Vemelka for, I believe, 5 more?
Now, I'm going to apologize because I was grinding on something else, had a deadline this morning, and was covering the Canucks game. So I didn't. Do you know what the number is on that one, guys?
4.75. I believe the Lankinen contract in Vancouver was kind of used as a comparable.
Well, I'll tell you, statistically, there's no comparison, at least this season. Vemelka's been a top 5 goalie in the National Hockey League this year. And 2 years ago, he was similar. He's one of those guys that I haven't figured out why he yo-yoed so much. It's funny, I was just talking to Philip Gustafson of the Minnesota Wild. Same thing for him. 2 years ago, brilliant. Last year, fell off a cliff. This year, back into the top 10 in the NHL in adjusted save percentage. Some guys just ride some of those ups and downs as they get settled in the National Hockey League. Vemelka, obviously they're banking on the high of 2 seasons ago and this season being his norm. You know, to me, he's a guy that if you can get him consistently playing at the level he played at 2 years ago in this season, that is a massive bargain, because his upside is every bit as good as some of the guys who have gotten $8 million a season. And when I compare it to Lankinen, who's obviously been very good for the Canucks as a starter this year, but statistically speaking, he's a level below. He's a notch below. He's more high-end 1B versus high-end 1A, and at least that's what the numbers say. And again, like, Lankinen, no argument, has saved the Canucks season in a starting role. And so the guys that have shown they can be starters for prolonged stretches deserve more money. But Vemelka's a guy who, if he could do it consistently, if he does this again next year, that becomes a real bargain for them. Whereas I have Lankinen more on par with Charlie Lindgren, who got 3x3. So really interesting to see some of the discrepancies in these deals. The raw numbers don't always tell the full story. Like, I know Lindgren's, I think, 897 on the public, you know, sort of NHL.com counting stats. But his adjusted save percentage is actually quite a bit higher than Kevin Lankinen's even this season. And he has a year where he got the Washington Capitals to the Stanley Cup playoffs as the number one, taking over that job last year. And he settles for 3x3, and these other guys are getting 5 years and close to $5 million. It's a really interesting time right now. But in terms of making those bets, if you're Utah and you trust that this year is closer to the norm for Vemelka, it's a heck of a bet to make.
the Flames are going to go with Dan Vladar tonight in Dallas as they wrap up their six-game road trip. Certainly no complaints about goaltending from either Vladar, who will be making his third start, or Dustin Wolf, who's made three already on this, their longest getaway of the season. Has their approach to this trip changed the way you see them using their goalies down the stretch at all?
Well, given the nature of the race and how tight it is, and how little margin for error anybody has within it, especially with St. Louis and Utah seemingly getting back into it, I think that answer could change on a night-to-night basis, performance-wise.
Sure.
As long as Dan Vladar sort of continues to hold up his end of the bargain, then it's a positive that you're not overplaying one guy. Like, that bodes well going down the stretch if you can get both guys going. But, you know, statistically over the course of the season, there's no question who the one is and the two is. And so, at the first sign of trouble, I would expect that you'd hedge back more to the guy who's played like a number one all season. Now, what I don't know, what I can't see not being around the team on a regular basis is, you know, how much work's required. We've talked about how hard it is once you sort of move into a number one role in the NHL to manage your game and manage your rest and all the practice time that you lose. And so not being around the team on a regular basis and seeing the work that goes into it with Jason LaBarbera and both guys, like, are there things that they feel, you know, Dustin needs a practice day today. We need to get back to this. It's starting to slip as he plays too much. And the only way he's getting that practice day today and really able to commit to it is if Dan's playing tomorrow. And so where they find that balance, you know, only the goalie coaching staff will sort of know what's needed. You have to trust it, and it becomes part of the equation, but certainly easier decisions to make when you've got both guys playing well compared to, you know, a much harder decision would be, man, like, we're seeing slippage in this guy's game because we're playing him so much, but we have to keep playing him. That's, you know, that's where you get into a slippery slope. We used to see it with Markstrom and the Canucks all the time. You'd start to see the diminishing returns in his game, and you knew he needed time off and a reset technically, and yet there were stretches where they couldn't afford to give it to him. And then other times where they're just like, yeah, we need to get this guy a game off so we can work with Ian Clark, the goalie coach at the time, and reset some of this technical stuff. Even if, and the example that was, you know, jumps to mind because it was so glaring, was when Anders Nilsson was really struggling, hadn't won in months, and yet they knew they needed to put him in for a game so they could get Markstrom back to even 90%. Rather than continuing to chip away 80, 75, 70, 65 by running him out there every night. And that's a tough balance to find down the stretch in a tight playoff race. And I don't know how much that plays into the decision without being around it on a daily basis, but those are the kind of things that you have to consider. It's not just who's winning. And as long as both guys give you, you know, good efforts, it's sure a lot easier than the alternative.
Final one for you, Kev, and it's, you know, this wild card race for number eight in the conference looks like it's going to continue for quite some time, and that includes the Flames, it includes the Canucks. Vancouver picks up the big win over Anaheim on Wednesday night to move back into a tie for that playoff spot. I'm curious as to, I mean, we've asked a lot about the goaltending, and obviously the Demko situation is going to be one to watch, and Lankinen and his performance continues to be a story to watch. I'm just curious as to where you are on the Canucks when it comes to their deadline on Friday, their playoff push, their goaltending, just all things in the market that you cover.
Well, let's start with the goaltending, because I am of the belief that I don't think Thatcher Demko will be out too much longer, even though he hasn't practiced yet. Obviously, he needs to get back to practice, get a couple good practices in before he is an option for a game. But he's skating, has been skating since last week, I believe. And I don't think he's far off sort of getting into a practice and being an option for them. The question is the success he had in his last five starts before the latest injury, like, the fact he finally seemed to find his game in that five-game stretch, is that enough that it's easy after missing a month to get back to it? Or is he sort of starting from scratch again? Because it has taken him longer this year to sort of get to the top form. If he gets to it quick, you know, what a luxury the Canucks have, because those last five games before his latest injury were, you know, peak Vezina Trophy finalist Demko. He was, you know, he was making really good saves and at times making really difficult saves look easy and giving them a chance to win every night. No coincidence that that was when they went on the 6-1-1 run. In terms of everything else, man, guys, like, your guess is as good as mine. The Soucy move with a year left on the contract. Elias Pettersson. One's Elias, one's Elias. I'm tired, so I can't remember which one.
Elias is the one that finds himself in all of the in all of the controversy.
Right. Yes, and Elias is the rookie defenseman.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, if I could, as an aside, the job that John Shorthouse does in real time, switching between Elias and Elias on the fly in play-by-play without missing a beat, is remarkable. So I can't even do it on the radio now, and he's doing it in real time on play-by-play. So the rookie defenseman has made quite the impression, guys, and I think that's one of the reasons they were willing to move on Soucy. I think there's an expectation that Tom Vilander will leave school after the NCAA season is done and join the team as well. But I think Pettersson has given them a real option on the left side beyond his years, and experience, and made them comfortable with making that move. Don't necessarily love it for the short-term chase. The reality is Soucy was able to play both sides for them, was playing on the right alongside Forbert, or when there was when he was out and Forbert moved up, he could move to the left side. Like, there was versatility to Soucy's game. And as much as this season was a struggle, some signs that his game was starting to round into form again. He was such a big part of their playoff push. I watched him with the Kraken the year before they signed him and how good he was in the playoffs. It kind of feels like it might be his time of year. And he's so good at denials off the rush and breaking plays up off the rush. This one, as much as I understand it, feels like it could be one that potentially comes back to haunt this group if they don't make other moves down the stretch here, which obviously, whatever haunts the Canucks, bodes well for the Flames.
Yep. Great stuff, as always, Kev. We always appreciate the time. Enjoy the deadline, and we'll see what type of things we've got to talk about next week when the deadline's done and we're only focused on the playoff push. Great stuff, as always, and enjoy deadline day, hey?
I will, but I'm going to be honest. I'm really looking forward to life after deadline day.
Us too. Us too. Every year. Thanks, Kev. Be well, hey?
You too, guys. Thanks.
That's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com in Vancouver, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Cam Hughes, Taylor Dingman are outstanding producers this hour. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. And that'll do it for the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.